I can still be unduly attached to it. And this I can recognize by certain signs. Some are outside of me, some are deeply inside of me. If the object, person, place, or thing, occupies my mind, at times it should be free of such preoccupation, like prayer or necessary duties. Or if the amount of attention I give to the person, place, or thing is out of proportion to its objective value and importance. Thus, there's a hierarchy of values. The supernatural is more important than, say, the merely intellectual. The intellectual is higher than the merely material. Some people can be so preoccupied with their bodies as to overlook the fact that they have a soul. There are few hypochondriacs when it comes to spiritual disease. Psychology knows a lot. In fact, some years ago, a big, thick book in medical therapy, which listed hundreds of simulated diseases that people can think they have but don't. They are so attached to their health. Everything from asthma to what's a disease that would end with the end of the alphabet? I think xerostenia is a disease. Consequently, if I am more concerned with an intellectual project than with my spiritual obligations, to the evident detriment of the latter, I am unduly affected towards things of the mind. If I find myself habitually taking complacence in some possession, to the point where I tend to contemn or pity others for lacking what I have, it may be a good thing that I've got, but I'm overly attached to it. I never pity somebody for not having what I have if my attachment to what I have is ordinate. If I often lose peace of mind from definable or undefinable causes, on account of what I have or do, I am too attached to the object, person, or practice. Since, if my affection is orderly, it will always produce tranquility of mind, which is the essence of peace. That sentence is worth $1,000,000. I cannot tell you what a key that is in the spiritual life. Orderly affections produce peace. Inordinate affections deprive one of peace. If I am often afraid of losing or being hindered in the use of some gift or possession, or if I feel dissatisfied with what I have, whether its amount or quality or perfection, I am too enamored of the object, because the right kind of affection always precludes anxiety. So the other side of the spectrum, justice, peace, is the sign of orderly affection. So anxiety is the sign of inordinate affection. If I regularly talk about my achievements along certain lines or advertise what I have, and after a few years in the religious life, I of course will have to disguise my by now 50th repetition of that same dear quality I've got. Clearly, my attachment is inordinate. If I am inclined to envy others, this is a very subtle index for some kind of talent, production, or gift, which I feel outshines or obscures my own. I must consider that whatever I've got, I am unduly attached to, because orderly affection excludes envy. If I tend to be jealous of what I have, that's the opposite of envy, which means that I am slow to share it with others, or fearful that others may acquire the same. Imagine? Well, we don't have to imagine. I am overly in love with a creature, no matter how lawfully I acquired it, or even how holy the thing may be in itself. You see, we can be unduly attached even to holy creatures. That's right. Strange, but true. Well, having said that, we still have one piece left. How to overcome our inordinate attachments. As in so many things in the spiritual life, we can express the principle very simply. It is putting it into practice that is hard. The principle consists, that is, how do you get rid of inordinate attachments? It consists in reaching the following attitude of mind. Quote, I decide that I will, if necessary, surrender the creature to which I am unduly attached. Let me repeat. I decide with my mind that I will, and of course that freedom must take over, that I will, if necessary, give up. Surrender the creature to which I am unduly attached. We are saying it is not in itself sinful. Nevertheless, for me it's an obstacle. Now let us add, it may not be necessary to do so. I may not have to give it up. That's not the point. But, so the giving up may not be necessary, but my willingness to give it up is absolutely necessary. And I didn't come by this clarity of expression last night. Now let me go back for a few minutes and see what St. Ignatius, the great master, on this subject says, why the true test of detachment is the willingness either to keep or to put away a creature to which, before God, I have convinced myself I am unduly attached. Why would have this be necessary? Why is it necessary to be ready physically to relinquish something, whatever it is, a person, a possession, an object, a trinket? The objective value of a thing is no measure of the degree of attachment to that thing. Here we are, very odd. But that's us. Why is it necessary to be ready to give it up as a guarantee that I am detached from the creature in question? Why is it not sufficient, say, to, well, just get my mind off of it psychologically, yet retain the object? The reason lies very deep in Christian asceticism. Any creature I possess and to which I am strongly attached carries with it certain beneficial effects which I enjoy when and insofar as the creature is used. Let's use money to illustrate the principle. Less obvious but equally pertinent, for example, would be cultural possessions or even spiritual things. For priests, they like to preach, or they like to teach, or they don't like to preach, or certain forms of prayer, or certain opinions, you name it, and we can be inordinately attached to that thing. My will may become more or less bound to any one of these because I have learned from experience what comfort, pleasure, or consolation they afford me when I use them. But when, after prayerful reflection, I discover that my attachment is out of order, I am faced with the decision of either compromising and say, well, I'll keep it off my mind, I'll pray about it, I'll make a novena, or of going all out in ridding myself of the affection. St. Ignatius would have it that unless I am ready to be rid of the thing itself, I am not really sincere in the desire to correct my malaffection. I can't tell you how many people I've struggled with, although this happens to be in print. Believe me, it's in real life. Let's pray for just a moment, and then we'll let go of the subject. Whenever a creature produces an undue attraction, the fault or defect must not be sought in the creature itself. This is crucial, which is our usual tendency, but rather in me. Evidently, this must be true because the same creature may be safely possessed by someone else with no detriment or even with positive benefit to his or her spiritual life. Why is it a problem for me?
Well,
you can do all kinds of psychoanalysis. But in the last analysis, it's a problem. Perhaps I have not received the grace necessary both to keep physically and spiritually to profit from the disturbing creature. Some can, I can't. Or I may be lacking, culpably or otherwise, in those qualities of mind and temperament needed to overcome the natural seductiveness of what disturbs my peace of mind. Almost certainly, the state of life to which God has called me makes demands on my generosity and self-sacrifice which cannot be properly fulfilled except at the cost of being freed of certain inordinate affections. No matter. And after you've spent, and some people spend years of diagnosis before and even if they apply the remedy. If, however, I find out that I have the disorderly attachment, there is no objective assurance, it's all in my imagination, that I think I can both have it and not suffer in keeping it. There is no assurance I have of becoming volitionally detached unless I remove what stimulates the attachment, namely the creature itself. There is a limit to my ability to be exposed to the stimulus and to remain ordinately attached. Some can do it. I can't. And even this limit is unpredictable, undefinable, and uncertain. To make sure I am delivered from the troublesome affection of attachment, I must remove its source. The degree of my readiness to do this determines my sincerity before God. Sisters, for this we need many things, and here we're speaking to all of ourselves. We've all got them. That is, some inordinate attachments. It means self-reflection. Hence the transcendent importance of daily self-examination. It means, secondly, absolute honesty with God. It finally and especially means grace, for which we should ask, Lord, give me the strength to be willing to give up that stands between you and me. He may take it away. If he does, so be it. If he doesn't, thank him for the willingness to remove what keeps me from God is the guarantee of my also receiving the grace to be able to do it. Sisters, thanks again.